Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to the Coffee Table here on KBBI AM 890 Homer. I'm Quentin Chandler, and I am in the studio with a group of individuals representing nonprofits here in Homer. I'm wondering if I can go around the table here and get you guys to introduce yourselves. We'll start with you, Jessica.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Jessica Lawmaster, and I'm the executive director of Haven House.
And Jill.
This is Jill Lush. I'm the executive director of Sprout Family Services. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And lastly, we have Ginny.
Thank you. Ginny Espenshade, the executive director of the Kenai Peninsula Youth Court.
And we have a fourth guest on the phone. Joining us is Lisa Roberts. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning. Thank you so much for giving us time this morning.
Lisa, could you just introduce yourself and explain who you're with?
Yes, I am Lisa Roberts. I'm from the Kenai Peninsula United Way, and I'm calling in from Kenai this morning.
Thank you very much, Lisa. And for our listeners, basically today we are going to be talking about potential funding cuts to nonprofits here on the Kenai Peninsula and a campaign that the United Way has underway to try and make sure that all the nonprofits in the area have the funding that they need. So first, I want to start with you, Lisa. Could you kind of just explain what the Kenai Peninsula United Way is and why, what its relationship is to the nonprofits that most of our listeners are familiar with?
Thank you. Kenai Peninsula United Way is a service organization that raises funds for nonprofits and for their programs that they have. We've been in existence now for 30 years, and we're very happy to be able to raise funds throughout the entire Kenai Peninsula and distribute those funds back to the nonprofits. And we use very, very little of the money for administrative costs ourselves. So therefore, most everything that we donate to United Way is distributed back to the nonprofits that we support. In the past history has been that for every dollar raised in Homer, you get five back. So those are pretty good odds.
Thank you very much, Lisa. So we are going to start talking about this campaign that you guys have to fund the United Way. But first, I want to go back to our group here in the studio, and I want to ask you guys to kind of explain your nonprofits and your missions here in Homer, starting with you, Jessica.
Sure. So at Haven House, we're a resource center for people who have been impacted by domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse. And then in recent years, we've expanded to encompass a new prevention program that offers community-based prevention activities throughout the community and in the schools. Basically, our mission is to support and empower people who have been impacted by violence. So we do this in a number of ways. We have a 24/7 emergency shelter that has 10 beds for survivors of domestic violence and their children. We have also a 24/7 crisis hotline where anyone in the community, regardless of age, gender, scenario, whatever kind of crisis, can call at any time and it can be anonymous. We also like to explain that with our crisis line, it doesn't necessarily have to be an emergency or an immediate crisis. It can be someone who just needs a little bit of support or needs someone to listen. And if it's beyond our area of expertise, then we can refer on. We also have transitional housing programming and homeless assistance support in the community. And we offer three children's advocacy centers across the Kenai Peninsula that serve as the community child abuse response programs for Homer, Kenai, and Seward. And then lastly, like I mentioned before, we have prevention programming throughout the community.
A wide range of services offered by Haven House. Jill, what about your group, Sprout?
Sure. So Sprout Family Services is a community-driven nonprofit. And we work to promote the healthy development of children and families, really targeting families with children pre-birth to kindergarten entry. And we do that in a number of ways, parenting and coaching, early literacy, family support that's offered through community services like playgroups and enrichment activities, and therapeutic supports for children like pediatric, occupational, physical, and speech therapies. We do all of our services in the natural environment, so that means that we provide our services usually in the home setting, sometimes in the playground, sometimes at childcare, but really wherever families are, that's where we are. We currently serve 380 children on the peninsula.
And thank you, Jill. Jenny, you are up next.
Thank you. The Kenai Peninsula Youth Court has three locations. We run programs in the Central Peninsula out of the old Kenai Courthouse. We run programs in Homer, and we also provide classes and cases at the head of the Bay communities of Bosnesenka, Rezdolna, and Kachemak Silo. What we do is train young people in the criminal justice system, and then they volunteer and staff actual cases involving their peers. Through successful completion of what the student judges ask the offender to do, that offender can move forward with much less of a record. We get referrals from the district court for underage drinking cases, and we get referrals from the juvenile justice probation officer for things like shoplifting and vandalism. And it's basically a youth empowerment program and also a way for young people to learn from their mistakes without obstacles to a brighter future.
All right, perfect. And now I'm just curious, I'm going to stay with you for a second, Jenny, wondering if you can just kind of explain why your groups are necessary here in Homer. Why is it important to have you guys here and funded to provide your services? Let's start with the youth courts, Jenny.
Well, before there were youth courts in Alaska, the Division of Juvenile Justice would often, if a kid got caught shoplifting, their parents would get a letter in the mail. Don't do this again. Talk to your kid about not doing this again. The state agency, the probation office, has to spend their time processing and monitoring and supervising the more serious offenses. So the theory behind any type of diversion, such as youth court, is when someone gets in trouble the first time, the sooner and more impactful response, the more likely you are to change their behavior. The Urban Institute did a study comparing recidivism rates, and the Anchorage Youth Court was one of four they studied nationally, and the recidivism rates were much lower for the peer adjudication programs. Even if that weren't the case, I think it would be important to the community wanted a system where kids are held accountable but not punished with a permanent record. So we partner with state agencies. We fill some of the gaps. And there's a huge movement away from incarceration for many important reasons that we could do a whole show about. this is part of that movement, and youth courts are fairly well established. Alaska, our statute, gives our youth courts more authority than any other state in the nation. We do a little school court at West Homer Elementary, and we're the only elementary school youth court in the state and perhaps the nation. So it's a gap filler. But for that family whose young person has made a mistake and they are at a loss what to do about it, it's crucial to them when they need it.
Thank you very much, Jenny. So Jill, why do you think it's important or why would you say that Homer residents should give money to your organization? How would you persuade them?
So I think, simply put, parenting isn't easy, and parenting in isolation really isn't easy. So we find a lot of families living here on the peninsula are needing support. And it might be that they have family outside and that they're here and they moved here and they just don't have the natural built-in supports. It might be that their children have some challenges that they need support with. It might be that they're first-time parents and they just need somebody to help them navigate that. And so Sprout really offers something for everyone that has that are families that have children 0 to 5. And we're really focused on those early years because the early years are laying the foundation for later life success. So, you know, if we're in there early supporting families and their children and their parents are having successful relationships built early, we know that later life is just more successful. So by age 5, a child's brain grows 85 to 90% of its full capacity. So we're there supporting the parents, supporting the relationship, and really hoping to make a difference.
Thank you very much. And Jessica, why do you think it's important that Homer has a foundation like Haven House?
Well, 1 in 2 women on the Kenai Peninsula have been impacted by domestic and or sexual violence in her lifetime. So clearly there's a very big problem, not just on the Kenai Peninsula, but across the state and across the country. Haven House provides the immediate safety and support that's needed for victims of violence whenever they're able to make their way to help. Beyond that, though, Haven House has been really focused the last few years on meeting needs beyond just immediate safety and really asking the question, what do survivors of violence need, not only for a short amount of time in that sort of immediate safety period where they might be in shelter, but beyond that, how can we support their progress towards independent, safe, and sustainable lives? And so through that, we have been able to add programming around longer-term housing support. We've been able to add programming around economic empowerment and employment opportunities. So I think we provide a critical service not only in keeping people safe, but helping them progress into really empowered and independent and safe lives. And then in turn with our child advocacy centers, without the support, without providing support to non-offending caregivers of child abuse victims, the outcomes aren't great for children. The number one predictor of children's healing after being sexually abused is the support and care that they get from their family. So at Haven House and our different child advocacy centers, we provide support to the non-offending caregiver. We also really feel strongly about the impact that we make when that child tells his or her story for the first time at our center and how that information is received and responded to. So we just provide critical services to all victims of violence in terms of their healing and safety.
All right. And so you guys all provide varying services to varying groups here in Homer, but you aren't the only nonprofits represented here in town. Jenny, wondering if you can kind of go over some of the others that we don't have here today to speak for themselves.
Sure. And it's really interesting that there's 8 nonprofits in Homer that have offices in Homer that are Kenai Peninsula United Way agencies, and they run the gamut of personal life stages. We've got Ketchumak Bay Family Planning Clinic and Sprout for pre-birth and toddlers and childhood. We've got Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and Youth Court for the teens, and then more adult issues. We've got Haven House. We've got Cook Inlet Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse. And then the last two are more end-of-life services. We've got the Senior Center and their Friendship Center. And then we've got Hospice of Homer. And, you know, I guess my message to the community is, United Way is one way to support these 8 agencies. There's also the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts that are present in our community without an office. There's the American Red Cross that comes down in emergencies, the Kenai Care Center. Some of our youth are residing up there for special situations. It's one way to support those nonprofits, All of us are seeing a decrease in government funding for our missions, and this is one of several ways that you and the community can support one or all of these nonprofits.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Mm-hmm. Now, Lisa, we haven't forgotten about you. I want to go back to what we were discussing earlier. Actually, I just want you to kind of lay the foundation, kind of explain what the problem that you guys are seeing this year is. You guys do this campaign to raise funds for the United Way every year, but what is different about this year?
Well, this year we're seeing a lot less money come into us than we have in the past, and there's a lot of reasons for that. Economic reasons, of course. The price of oil has gone down, so of course we're losing some of the funding that we've seen in the past from from the oil patch, but we're hopeful because there are other things that we can do and ways that we can raise money, and we're just going to hang in there and just keep working at it and make the best of this slowdown in the economy and see what we can do to just help these nonprofits get through them. Because, of course, as everyone knows, when you start seeing layoffs, then the agencies that United Way supports start seeing a lot more clientele, which is really not what we want, but it's kind of a vicious circle. We've been here before and we've survived. We can do it again.
It's my understanding that you are kind of seeing this slowdown in funding on multiple fronts, not just, as you already pointed out, the oil patch, energy companies not having as much money to give. But, you have a slowdown in the private sector because of the economy. Everyone kind of across the board doesn't have as much money, but also the state government as well. Can you kind of just speak to all the, pockets of money that you usually draw on and the impact this current situation with our economy is having on those sources?
Sure. The state and the federal government agencies are cutting back on the grants that they are giving out to nonprofits. And we've seen that we've seen it kind of slowly take on, which is definitely putting more on the backs of the individuals. And of course, now we're seeing a lot of layoffs in all across the board. It's not just one sector or the other. It seems like everywhere you look, people are laying off, and we just are seeing a lot of cutbacks everywhere because of those kinds of things. The state's just cutting everything back on us, and unfortunately, they don't have the power to just create and build more money.
Right. And Jenny, it looks like you had something you wanted to say. Thank you, Lisa.
Well, I would add at the municipal level as well. If I'm sure many of the listeners have looked at the Budget A and Budget B for the city of Homer, and one of the components that would be taking a hit is nonprofit support, either through the Homer Foundation city grants or direct allocations to some of our agencies. So I think it's fair to say that government has to cut, and one of the things that is easy to cut is the nonprofit support. And many people agree that means it's time for the private sector to step up, and we are the private sector. So that's why we're reminding you of that.
Thank you very much. And Jenny, could you kind of remind people what the Homer Foundation is and how that relationship works with these nonprofits here in town?
The Homer Foundation is a community foundation. I think it's tens of years old now, and it is in place to provide direct support to nonprofits that provide services in the Homer area. And one of the arrangements several years ago, instead of the city having to weigh and evaluate and listen to impassioned testimony about every nonprofit program in the community, and they were uncomfortable deciding who got what, they decided to instead allocate an annual amount to the Homer Foundation, and then the Homer Foundation does similar work to what United Way does as far as develop an application, evaluate the applications, look at the financials, and hold the grantees accountable. So that was a way for the city of Homer to provide support through this foundation process, and that is being threatened, and every year it is threatened the amount or even if any money's going to that.
Got you. And Jessica, you are seeing this on two fronts, city funding wise. You are also drawing funds from the Homer Foundation, I'm guessing, and you also have a line item in the budget for this, or in the city of Homer's budget, that could be cut depending on what options the city decides to go with.
So Haven House is a little bit different in that we're not eligible to apply for Homer Foundation city funding because we are already in the budget. And our funding is a little bit different in that historically the city of Homer and the Homer Police Department have acknowledged the public safety function and service that Haven House provides to the community, both through our emergency shelter and through the forensic interviewing services we provide to the police department in child abuse cases, criminal cases. So our funding is broken out a little bit differently because of that service piece. But certainly the city is in a position of making some tough decisions, as every layer of the government is. Haven House is funded about 85% by government sources, both state and federal. And we experienced cuts this current fiscal year and are bracing for more state cuts this next fiscal year. So it is a hot topic that we're all very in tune with, and our boards are all working really hard to plan and get creative. And part of that creativity is, I guess, twofold. One is in how can we better collaborate with each other as nonprofits and organizations throughout the community, and then two, how can we creatively think of new ways to generate income and diversify our funding.
Jill, I'm wondering if you can talk to me a little bit about your Sprouts position with state funding. Did you see cuts this year?
We did, yeah. The community might be familiar with one of the programs that we run, Parents as Teachers. That one, I think, year to year goes through some challenges. And every year across the state, there is a lot of testimony and advocacy for the legislature to provide funding and to keep that up. And this year we experienced about a 20% cut, and we were able to just sort of spread that cut around at Sprout, and so we were able to continue the position and embed it into other services that we provide. One of the really important pieces about United Way funding and City of Homer Foundation funding, Sprout receives City of Homer Foundation operating money, and the amount of it comparatively to like a state grant is so small. So we get several thousand dollars from the City of Homer, and our United Way money, same thing. Like the percentage that it's actually making up of our budget is so small, but the leverage that it provides to the state dollars is the thing that I think is the most important. So we have several grants, one in particular it's sort of a new program, and it's marketed as the Families Together program. It's providing intensive family support and preservation services for families that have experienced child abuse and neglect. And the purpose of the program is to keep families together. So we're in the home with families, offering up to really as the maximum amount of time that we can possibly provide with them. Sometimes we have our service providers that are doing up to 20 hours a week with a family. And that money came from the State Office of Children's Services, and we had to provide a match to that grant in order to even receive it. So that's what we did with our Homer Foundation money, with our United Way money. Like that sort of contribution foundation grant or donations, they offset that percent that we need in order to bring those dollars into this community and provide these critical services that really get maximized with United Way money.
Thank you, Jill. And I believe that is a pretty common practice for a lot of nonprofits. Jessica, is that the same situation that you guys experience over at Haven House?
Absolutely. I think most, if not all, United Way agencies probably have some responsibility to match dollars on some level. And particularly with our state funding, we have match requirements. And just to kind of give you an idea of what that looks like for an organization like Haven House, we have to come up with about $150,000 a year in match funds. So with state dollars and federal dollars, you can't match those dollars with other government funding. It has to be through foundation funding or individual private gifts. And so that's a lot of money to come up with in addition to all of the grant funding that we're seeking and going after. And so it's just invaluable when you give $200 to United Way, that money is actually being multiplied to match a lot of other funds that are coming in. So I would echo Jill in that United Way funds are critical for us to leverage our dollars.
Thank you, Jessica. Jenny, did you have anything you wanted to add to this line of
A couple of things. I wanted to add that the other factor about United Way funding is it's unrestricted funding. And so a dollar that you can spend in reaction to some mishap or an opportunity that you didn't know about when you wrote your budget is worth so much more than that restricted dollar from the state or federal government funding. You know, last spring when the State House Finance Committee started their cuts, I was up at the Legislative Information Office, and the room was filled with passionate people testifying about public radio cuts. I mean, your station was devastated by cuts, the parents as teachers, and every program that was talked about in that hearing was important to our community, was valuable, provided important if not essential services. And it occurred to me that we were all in a panic and we felt totally powerless. Many of those cuts were restored to some extent or another, but we know we can't forget that feeling, that almost nauseous feeling when we heard we were zeroed out, the youth courts in the state were zeroed out in that budget. So we could just brace ourselves for the next round, or we could be proactive. And I think that if you talk to the 4-Acre people, the state organization that supports nonprofits, private donations are much more sustainable as a revenue source than government funding. And we're learning that the hard way. But we, as most of the state, we got used to that government funding. And so now we're trying to pivot and remind the community, if you value these services, if you value these programs, and if you can afford it. And I think we all were pleasantly surprised that our permanent fund was a little bit more than we expected. And many of us do pick, click, give. But I still feel like I have a little bit left in my pocket, and this would be one way. And I'm not saying it's the only way, but just remember the private sector is going to have to step up if you want these programs in your community.
Thank you very much, Jenny. I think now is a good time to open up our phone lines and remind people they can call in with questions for our guests or comments. You can call 907-235-7721. That is 907-235-7721 if you want to call locally. And if you want to call toll-free, you can call 1-800-979-5224. That's 1-800-979-5224. You're listening to The Coffee Table. And Jessica, I want to go back to you. Jenny mentioned, you know, pick, click, give as one of the options people can kind of use to donate to United Way without, you know, going through a lot of extra effort. Did you guys see a lot of, you know, benefit from pick, click, give in this last year?
Absolutely. Pick, click, give is another excellent source of those unrestricted dollars that can match other funds and pay for things that grants don't pay for. So in the last couple of years, Haven House has seen great support from pick, click, give. This year we had over $5,000 in pledges, and that's over $5,000 to meet unmet needs from our grants and to fill those holes and gaps and provide the much needed services that we need. Our shelter is, you know, for the last 2 years, we have 10 beds and we've averaged over 11 and a half beds a night for the last 2 years. So even with grant funding that's designated to provide operational support for shelter, we're over capacity and beyond the needs that those grants are meeting. So every dollar counts. We just can't echo that enough. And pick, click, give is an incredible way to support nonprofits.
Jill, are there any other kind of strategies that you've kind of encouraged people to use to donate to Sprout that you think have been pretty successful?
Well, I can talk about sort of a new way. We recently are undergoing some website changes, and we have a donor site that's sort of like the KBBI monthly giving. And so I think that's a new way where maybe you can't afford $50 at once, but you could afford $10 every single month, which over time adds up, as you we all can tell, to $120 a year instead of that one-time $50 donation. So I think even in small increments, there also is something really cool about the United Way campaign that I think we should bring up, which is about how businesses can help support donating to us through United Way. And that really is kind of a unique way, I think, that United Way offers that other sources don't have. And it might be just as simple as Pick, Click, Give. It's where your business can help support your giving and sort of encourage the contributions to come right out of your paycheck. And is Lisa still on the line? Could she give us some details about that?
Yes, Lisa. Jill's asking if you could add in on her comments just now.
You bet. A lot of the bigger corporations will match dollar for dollar, 50 cents on the dollar, whatever their employees decide to give. Now, that's not every employer does that, but there are a lot of the bigger ones that do that. And, of course, when that money comes in, it is then put into what we call our allocations money. And that money is distributed between the 27 agencies that United Way represents. Now, Kenai Peninsula United Way covers everything from Seward all the way down to Homer. And, of course, our Homer agencies go beyond the bay there into Saldovia. So we have a big area to cover. And we don't want to see any of the nonprofits go away. And to speak a little bit to what she was saying about just a small donation, just to give you an example, if you were to give $10, $5 a week, let's just say $5 a week, a cup of coffee, give up that espresso one day every week, and that would give back to the community in such a huge impact you can't even imagine. That will provide 50 meals to homebound seniors. It would provide, if I understand it correctly, it would provide about a week's care at Haven House for a family that might be suffering an abuse situation. So it doesn't take much to make a huge impact. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in life that $5, even though we throw it away in one way, we could really be doing some good with it in another. One of the interesting statistics that I recently learned was that everything is shifting. In the past, it's always been contributions from individuals that have spearheaded a lot of the things that we have that have made the nonprofit so great. And on top of that, then they also relied very heavily on government grants. And the shift that we're seeing now is that a lot of the nonprofits are having to come up with earned revenue, which that can be very trying on a nonprofit. So if everybody could just think about it in terms of what is going to give you the best for your investment? I think that funding the nonprofit world right now in today's economy is really, really in the end result going to end up being making a big impact on everybody.
Thank you very much, Lisa. I have some more questions for our guests here, but first we have a caller on line one, Megan.
Hi there.
Hey, Megan.
I was hoping that maybe Jill or someone in the room could speak to the early child tax credit as a way to increase revenues.
How about it? Is there anyone who would like to take that early child tax credits? How does that work?
Sure. Hi, Megan. Thanks for the question. The early childhood tax credit is pretty new, and it is basically a way to contribute and to offset your contribution by receiving tax credits from the state. It was last fiscal year that it was passed by our state legislature, and Sprout is one of the recipients of that. You have to work with families with young children in order to be an agency that receives that. And gosh, I don't have the details in front of me, but I do have a lot of information about that at Sprout. It really just incentivizes giving to the early childhood years.
Right. So if anyone has more questions about this, they can contact you later on when the show is over and you're back at your office.
And our local Representative Seaton is the legislator who introduced that legislation and really helped get it through.
That's right.
Nice fact.
We're so lucky to have him supporting the nonprofit mm-hmm. sector, and especially the early childhood field.
Thank you very much for that, Jessica. That's a nice little add-in. Jenny, next I want to talk about the United Way's relationship with the nonprofits here in Homer. You kind of mentioned to me earlier that you guys are looking to build, to raise a little bit more revenue than you have in the past because your contributions to United Way haven't been, anyways, the Homer nonprofits' contributions to United Way funds haven't been on par, I guess you could say, with the rest of the peninsula. Could you kind of go into that a little bit?
And actually, I have better information than when we talked earlier. And this is from Lisa's information. The donations are processed by zip code of the individual or the business that donated it. And based on that, last year there were 48 donations with the 99603 zip code for a total of $15,728. But our agencies received from Kenai Peninsula United Way $51,628. So our goal is to increase participation locally, increase the number of donations, and then the amount obviously would reflect that. But I think the participation, and it can be through volunteering, it can be being, we need folks from Homer to volunteer to be on the Kenai Peninsula United Way board, to be on the allocations committee. That's the groups that we present to each year to hold us accountable, and then they choose and decide how to divide up the pie. So we get our share of the pie, but we're not putting as much into it that we get out of it. And there's really good reasons for that, given the corporate presence up in the Central Peninsula. But as their contributions go down, and as awareness in Homer of how important these agencies are to our community, I think it's an opportunity to just increase participation in whatever way you can.
Lisa, I'm curious how it's decided how much organizations draw from the pot of money that comes into the United Way. How are the funds divided up?
I am so glad you asked that question. This is, no one at United Way makes that decision. It is done by a group of volunteers from throughout the peninsula. I always try to find representatives from Homer, from Seward. I had some from Manilchik and Anchor Point last year. So my hope is that I would have representatives from the entire Kenai Peninsula that would listen to the presentation. So they're split up into groups according to the types of services they provide. Based on that, they have to provide information to Kenai Peninsula United Way, which we put together in a book, and then we distribute it to the volunteers that that will be doing the interview. And so the allocations committee, that's what that particular group is called. And what they do is they get these books. They have an opportunity to look through the financial information and the narrative that each United Way agency provides to us. They then have an interview process, which is an all-day event, and it's quite amazing how we say this particular group, be it the youth or the family services or the health and rehabilitation people, we give them a pot of money that they get to distribute between the agencies that present to them. There is not a single person from United Way that actually gets to make that decision. It's made completely by volunteers. And, you know, when you donate to United Way, all that money goes in. If you want to designate money to a specific organization, we certainly welcome that, and we certainly give them that money 100%. The allocations money is the money that gets distributed by the volunteers.
Right. Go ahead. Sorry. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
No, it's a two-year process, and it's based on what we collect, what we have pledged from the prior year. So right now we're in our 2015 campaign that started May 1st. It will end on April 30th. And whatever we have on April 30th is what we will, whatever pledges we have is what we will distribute next year.
Got you. So do you have a specific dollar amount, a specific goal that you are trying to reach by, you know, that April deadline?
Yes. This year, our goal, our campaign goal is $400,000
for the entire peninsula.
For the entire peninsula. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Do you guys each, for your respective organizations, have goals as far as what you'd like to, you know, what you'd like to raise? Or are you just, you know, doing your best to help the rest of the organizations meet that $400,000 mark?
This is an example of collaboration. I mean, and we brought you a Live United t-shirt, Quentin, because I see this as a team. For example, I volunteer with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I'm here advocating for them as much as for the agency that I get my paycheck from. We're just reminding folks that this is a unique way to provide support for nonprofits in the community. We've been doing presentations at businesses, and we have the paperwork for anyone that wants to make a contribution. Any business that wants a presentation could call me at the Homer Youth Court office, 235-4985, or you could coordinate it through Lisa at 283-9500. I don't put a dollar amount. I know there are ways to measure participation and awareness, and Megan Murphy would be the one to do that. But that's my goal, is to increase awareness. So when if I talk to someone this week, they're going to say, "Oh yeah, I remember hearing about that."
Right. Thank you very much, Jessica. I'm wondering what happens to Haven House if you guys don't reach the I'm not going to say don't reach your goal, but if you guys just have a huge drop off in giving, and you don't have the funds that you need to, you have budgeted, what happens to Haven House? How do you guys cope with that? I guess what would be your worst case scenario?
Well, that actually is something that many people are out there trying to prepare nonprofits for right now, is how to kind of brace for the worst case scenario in terms of funding cuts that are coming through the state. But, you know, we've all talked about how we rely on those unrestricted dollars, and without them, you know, we talked about the matching and leveraging of grant dollars, and we actually can't receive those grant dollars without that commitment to matching them. So not only might it impact the way that we spend those dollars within our organization, but it also might impact the amount and level of funding we're able to get from grants. You know, we, I think, probably all nonprofits in this community and throughout the state are really looking at our organization and our services and really focusing on the core services and what we can do and how to make the most of what we have. So we at Haven House, we're not preparing to close our doors by any means, but we are trying to really connect with our real mission and those core services that we provide and how to do them well with less funding. And we are having to ask some difficult questions about what might have to give a little bit. However, we are also really interested in creative new ways to generate income and revenue. And I think that's something that all nonprofits are looking at as well, is it's time to really figure out how we can all work together and collaborate and not just make the most of what we have with our own individual organization, but make the most of the resources that we all have together and the services that we all provide that complement each other.
Jill, what are you guys doing to build, to raise support, to convince people to, you know, maybe dig a little bit deeper and give a little bit more money, or to convince people to donate for the first time? What are you guys, what are your strategies here to kind of build awareness of the current issue that you guys are facing?
Well, I think one of the things is being on this coffee table right now. So just really collaborating together, going around and talking to businesses, making sure that people are informed about the state of the state and how that's going to impact the services that we provide. I think many of the things that Jessica said, she could have been saying them for Sprout. I think really the nonprofit sector is together in this. We're all seeing that this is going to happen. And interestingly, I think this town in particular, Homer, is sort of ahead of the game when it comes to collaboration. And I think as far as sustainability goes for all of our services, those partnerships are becoming more and more critical. And there's a lot of really neat things going on around the community that are sort of spearheaded by the MAP Coalition. But definitely collaborations and the discussions are already in movement. It's just going to be about, can we move forward before the effects happen? And I think that's sort of echoing what Ginny was saying earlier, is we do a really good job of coming together in crisis. And if we can anticipate that that crisis is on its way, can we come together now? So we're asking for support and contribution and participation today.
Right. So, Ginny, I'm curious, from what you've seen so far, do you have any is it too early to tell? Are the indicators there as to whether or not you are doing well in, convincing people to, you know, give their support, or, you know, where do you think you kind of stand just at looking at the numbers right now?
I think we are reminding people. It's interesting. We did a luncheon with the chamber, and some of the people that were most excited were people that remembered and were very involved in their United Way in different states and different communities. And it was an exciting memory for them. And I think we can generate that same excitement. I think United Way has kind of been in the background, and we're putting it back out in front of people as another way to support several of the nonprofits in the community. And I would echo what Jessica said about how do we withstand this decrease in funding. And I look at focus and relationships and partnering. For example, the opportunity the radio station gave us today, and that's a symptom of a ongoing supportive connection between public radio and the nonprofit sector. I mean, you are part of the nonprofit sector, but what you provide as far as communication and awareness for the nonprofits, if we could put a price tag on it, it would be a big part of the nonprofit's budget and strategic planning. So we have good connections with the school district, with the court system, and get to use the courthouse after hours. That type of thing is the in-kind and the networking and the relationships. I think we can we still need to pay the phone bill. But that takes a lot of pressure off our budgets, the more we can interconnect and have partnerships around the community.
Thank you for the compliments, Jenny. We just
I mean it.
We just do our best to provide our services to our listeners. So what I was going to ask you next was, what kind of support do you have in the from the business communities, the business community here in Homer?
We have had, there have been some traditional supporters. The city of Homer used to do an internal campaign where they had contests. The hospital has traditionally been big givers. The banks often are big supporters. We're putting the word out, and we're still available to do those presentations. You know, I'll talk to a group of three. And so some people think, well, our business isn't big enough to do a big campaign like, let's say, Tesoro does. That's not the case. And I know we just presented to one of the phone companies, and they had a drawing among their employees, and to be in the drawing, they just needed a receipt. And so that was really fun for us to go out and present to that group. So I think again, we're reminding them. We're just reminding them this is a way to support our nonprofit sector.
We are coming up on the end here, but I want to go back to Lisa. Lisa, I think you already kind of mentioned that United Way only takes a small administrative type of fee to provide the service to the nonprofits here on the Kenai Peninsula. Wondering how much of the money that comes into the United Way goes back to these nonprofits?
Typically, it's about 85% goes back.
Gotcha.
Between 85-90% goes back to the nonprofits. We've seen a little bit of a slowdown over the last couple of years, so we may have gone over that just a little tiny bit, but for the most part, we try to stay right in that 13 to 15% for administrative costs.
Got you. And administrative costs, could you kind of give us an idea what falls under that?
Well, we do have an office here in Kenai. I am a paid staff person, but only a three-quarter time paid staff person. I have a bookkeeper she might work 20 hours a month. As far as salaries go, that's it. Everyone else is a volunteer. We have our own telephone. We have the cost of printing the forms that we distribute, keeping the lights on, having a telephone, a copy machine, those kinds of things. We do have computers that we keep some of our data on, and we have to keep those safe. So we do subscribe to some antiviral things for the computers.
Got you. Okay.
Other than that, really, I mean, we're on a shoestring budget, and we do the best we can with the money that's given to us. And in today's world, when you're looking at a nonprofit, most nonprofits today will use a lot more than that for administrative fees. So we're very fortunate and very proud of the fact that we try to keep it right where it needs to be.
And Lisa, typically do you each year receive the funding from, all these different sources, the private sector and the public sector? Do you typically receive the funding that you need at the end of the day?
We work with what we're given. Everything we're given, just like any other nonprofit. And if the money isn't here, then I don't have it to spend. But I have been known to spend money out of my own pocket for my passion, which is nonprofits.
All right. Thank you very much. We are coming up on the end of the show here. We have about 5 minutes left. Just want to go around the table here and let everyone kind of expose whatever is left on their minds that we haven't gotten to today. I want to start with you, Jessica.
I love it. Just open it up. So, yeah, we've talked a lot about how you can support nonprofits through United Way. There's eight of us, like Jenny said. There's a lot going on, like Jill mentioned, through the MAP Coalition, and I just wanted to talk about that for a few minutes because as we're talking about maximizing resources and collaborating, that is such a hub for a way to plug into doing that. And there's currently so much going on that I won't be able to even talk about half of it, but one effort that's happening right now is we're really working together on a community level and invite anyone with an organization in the Homer or Southern Kenai Peninsula community to join this effort of looking at what spaces exist in Homer, what spaces are currently being utilized, what spaces aren't currently being utilized, what space is needed by organizations, as well as what services do our organizations provide, both administratively and program and direct service types of services that we could potentially be sharing. And it's kind of an innovative idea to do this on a community level. Homer is really renowned both across the state and even getting some national attention now in the work that we're doing collaborating together. And various folks throughout the state are really looking to us to be a model. And so I would just encourage people to plug into the MAP effort and see how you can contribute to that. And it's a really exciting time and a lot of possibility for creativity and innovation in how we work together.
Thank you very much, Jessica. And Jill, anything else that you would like to add that we haven't gotten to today?
I just think, when we're talking about Sprout and programs like Sprout, dollars that are invested into early learning programs like that have significant social payback. And research shows that there's a lot of dollars that come back for $1 spent. And I just want to say, like, contributing to United Way feeds into programs like that. And we just appreciate all of the things that United Way contributions can do for our community.
Thank you, Jill. Jenny, we have about 2 minutes left. Anything that you would like to add?
I would just like to remind people that, you know, Homer is renowned for caring for its kids and its animals and its families, and this is one way to show that you do care. But I would add that this may not be the way for you. But, you know, if you have some kale in your garden still, take it down to the food bank. Go help out at some of these nonprofits. And you think you're giving, but you're being given too, how you feel about yourself. So that's one thing that I'm passionate about is reminding us that we all are in this community together, and we're all just one illness away from needing some of these agencies or some of this help. And I love that about Homer. I just want to remind us about Homer that this is one way to show it.
Thank you very much, Jenny. And Lisa, is there anything else you want to add before we close the show here? We have about 30 seconds.
Okay, so one thing that I'd like to finish up on is that it's really easy to write one check and support the eight agencies in Homer. It's so easy, and you never know when you might need one of those agencies. And it's true what we've all been saying, that it's now is the time to start working together and trying to make the best we can of what we're given.
Thank you very much, Lisa. And thank you, everybody who is listening.